Hello, neighbours. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 31 of season 2. We humans are storytellers. Stories are one of the ways that we come to know the world. Without direct experience, we rely on storytellers to present the world outside our immediate view. For example, if you don't know any farmers or food producers personally, how do you get to know these worlds? Sometimes through stories. Today, we talk to a person who tells stories about that world. She happens to be doing it as a journalist. Maybe you've heard programs in her series on CBC. It's called From the Ground Up. Maybe you've been interviewed by her. Lindsay Bird is a storyteller of food and farming in Newfoundland and Labrador. We meet her in a moment and turn the microphone around so we can find out more about her story and her experience in telling our stories.
In my time in Newfoundland, we're looking at like about 8 years now, I think I've seen really big changes in the amount of farm stands and different innovations and people seeking out that local food. The education that I've had personally about agriculture has been huge. I wouldn't have been able to tell you before I started reporting exactly how a carrot grew, but now I grow them myself. Anything that encourages more people to grow stuff and try it out, I don't understand why there'd be something that would discourage that effort, particularly in the name of aesthetics. The From the Ground Up series kind of harnesses that idea. What are we doing and how are people making a difference and what can we learn from them?
Okay, I can guess what you're thinking. Why should I listen to two journalist types talking to each other about food and agriculture? It seems like a bit of an in-joke of sorts. But don't worry, I don't ask Lindsay for tips on interviewing and editing, though I dearly wanted to. Can these stories about food and agriculture have an effect on the person who is doing the telling? Can it change their own perspectives on food? And maybe, just maybe, have an impact on their own food production? And if it can affect the storyteller, maybe it can affect the listeners as well. It's one of those glorious West Coast sunny days in late October. There's a couple of them every year. We're in Lindsay Bird's backyard in the historic townsite area of Cornerbrook. We start by talking about her backyard and how that intersects with the stories that she tells. Come on, join us.
I'm Lindsay Bird. We're here standing in my backyard in townsite area of Cornerbrook. Just a kind of regular sort of backyard that I've kind of over time morphed more and more into a mini homestead. I've got several raised beds. I grow lots of veggies each year, some with varying degrees of success. I've got a chicken coop with a bunch of chickens in it that I get eggs from. And this year I decided that wasn't enough and I added two beehives as well. And they're just kind of doing their own thing. We won't get honey from them this year. It's just kind of like trying to keep them alive at this point is my big agricultural goal with those guys.
I didn't want to stop you right at the beginning, but you said this is an average backyard, and I'm thinking, I don't know if this is an average backyard.
It's slightly messier.
No. I mean, you've got more food growing here. As you say, you've got some raised beds. You've got some carrots still?
Yeah, still carrots going on.
Is this some sort of a cress or?
It's just clover. It's a cover crop. Yes.
Oh, you're doing regenerative agriculture.
I'm trying. Just an experiment that so far is working. Clover doesn't seem very hard to grow.
That's the next step, though. When people talk about having cover crops in regular agriculture, is that all of us gardeners should also be doing cover crops. So you planted that after?
Yes, I had garlic here this year, and I harvested that, over a month ago. It was done really early this year, and I didn't have energy to get into doing some fall lettuce or that sort of thing. Yep. And I had the clover, and I was just like, well, let's see what happens. Clover is good for the garden. I thought foolishly that maybe it would blossom in time for the bees to get at it. That's not going to happen, but it's a nice little carpet of green.
Right. Yeah. And then in the spring, you'll just
turn it over
and then just plant into that. Yeah. And you get some parsley there, I guess?
Yes, that just does its own thing. It's great.
I'm going to save some seed from that then?
Yes, absolutely. Excellent. And that overwintered. Yeah. Half of my farming is experiments. I just left it. Yeah. And then it came back. All of my big parsley plants came back this year. Yeah. Really great. And then I just let it go to flower to get the seeds off it. And we'll see what happens.
So where does this, having a garden and farming, where does that come from? Have you always done that? Is that part of where you grew up?
I grew up in suburban Toronto, like the 416, like the edge of the city, which like if you've been to Southern Ontario, there's no edges to anything. It just
Not
bleeds.
Anymore.
Yeah,
bleeds.
Just bleeds on and on. So I was really a suburban kid with no connection to that at all, except I was a horseback rider. So I was always, any chance I got, getting my mom or when I got my driver's license, driving out of the city to Barnes and hanging out there. That's not exactly agriculture, but it's very adjacent.
Yep.
And I remember in high school thinking, I was like, I want to be a farmer. And friends of mine, like, it just became a big joke at high school. Like, like, we're all mall kids, you know, you're going to be a farmer. And I was like, all right, that's kind of silly. So I'll go off and I'll study something else. But I've always really liked being outside. I've always wanted to grow things. And this is my first house.
Yep.
Like, I moved around a lot. This house, when we bought it, we were told, oh, this was Judge Soper's house. And I'm not from Corner Brook. I didn't know what that
meant. Judge Soper's, really?
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, he was a judge here in Corner Brook, obviously. And his wife was an amazing gardener. And the garden had gone fallow when we got here. You know, there was weeds this high. So I kind of started tinkering with the garden then. She had left a whole bunch of flowers, that like the peonies and everything. And I was like, all right, like, I've always wanted to kind of try this.
Yep.
And then just started with like one little raised bed and then another and then another. And then it just got ridiculous.
So this is like the fulfillment of your childhood dream.
You know, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
We're getting in the right direction. I could use more land for sure, and a little bit of expansion, but it all requires time, and we've pretty much maxed out right now.
Do you, every year you take a little bit of lawn away from
grass? Like, you know, the black currant bushes that I kind of like just dug holes and threw them in there earlier this spring, that sort of thing. I don't really care for grass or lawn. It doesn't do anything for me.
So the chickens, why did you decide to go with chickens?
Well, I mean, I'm a reporter, and we had done the stories that backyard chickens were allowed now, and it's like, I would really like to do that. That would be pretty fun. So I think we're permit number 3 or 4.
Oh, excellent. Well, you should have a little sign. That's right.
It is supposed to be displayed. It is inside. We have it on a...
Oh, I mean, the sign. Yeah. I was the third chicken to live in Corner Brook or something like that.
Well, those original chickens, I gotta say, Ivan, they have not survived this long.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
this is a second generation.
Second generation chickens. Chicken 2.0. That's right, yeah.
They don't lay eggs forever. It's a massive
tragedy.
That's
an odd thing. People are surprised at that. How long did the first generation lay eggs?
You know, they never laid eggs very well.
Well, and that's why they're gone. I can understand.
We were kind of given them as adults. It was very hard to find like laying hens, because you're only allowed to have laying hens here. You can't have the chicks. You have to get them as adults, which is like its own tricky.
That would be like saying you can't have children, but you can adopt them when they're 15.
Teenagers only, teenagers please. Only. So we had some doing to try to find adult chickens. And in the end, a friend of mine who has backyard chickens in Moncton was coming to visit her sister, and she brought over a whole bunch on the ferry. She told me they were rejected show chickens from a woman in New Brunswick who bred specialty chicken. Yeah. And we understood why they were rejected a few years later. We're getting one egg every 4 or 5 days. But these guys, we got as brand new egg layers, and they've been really good. This is their second summer, and they're still... Okay. We eat a lot of eggs. Egg and toast is the national dish of this house.
Do you have any problems with varmints coming around trying to get, you know, scare your chickens?
We had a problem with rats early on.
Oh, yeah.
Rats and town site go together like peanut butter and jelly.
We lived in town site.
We've done very creative things with our compost bins to rat-proof them, and we've had to rat-proof the chicken coop. One time I opened up the old system for feeding them, which was this big pipe that stuck out of the outside, so I could just lift it off and put the food down, and I lifted off the top of the pipe, and there was a rat butt just right there. I screamed.
The bees, new this year?
Yes, so it was I guess one of those deep pandemic things that you're doing. You're spending so much time in your yard, and you're like, what else can I put back here? And we became friends with Paige, who was formerly of the Newfoundland Bee Company and works at the greenhouse, and is like a great trove of all things agricultural and apicultural. And we helped her do a little bit of beekeeping, my friend and I, last summer. Got used to it and hung out with Lee Harvey up in Cormac Bee Company. Got our feet wet, and then my friend and I, we got our first hives this summer, and just constantly just trying to keep them alive. It's a steep learning curve. More so than the chickens. Chickens are like goldfish. Like, you just feed them once in a while and they're fine, you know?
That's
but
great.
Bees require quite a bit, so I'm getting ready to winterize them. I hope they make it through.
But you've seen them out and active.
Oh,
happy.
Yeah. A part of them is a mystery. I spend so much time out there watching. Sometimes I just have a chair set up at the chicken coop looking over because they just zoom up straight in the sky. I've got tons of flowers back here, and I thought I planted something specially for them, like the borage and a few other herbs that they really like. But for the most part, they just take up and they just go straight in the sky over the roof. Yeah. And it's just wild to watch this little, literally, beeline, I guess, of them going out elsewhere in the neighborhood.
This is a lovely homestead. Mm-hmm. Is there kind of a community of people who are doing this? Do you feel like you're part of that?
Oh, absolutely. And even our neighbors, our next door neighbors, started a garden a couple years ago, and we chat all the time about veggies. And our neighbor two doors down, she's been gardening forever, and she was a nurse up in the Northwest Territories. She's retired now, and she has stories and pictures of her growing pumpkins up in Northwest Territories. So there's definitely, there's such a community, and I feel like it's growing. We're right around around the corner from the Reed Street Community Garden. Mm-hmm. So I've watched that be put into place, watched it grow. I did a story about their community compost program they've mm-hmm. instituted mm-hmm. there. It's such a nice composter that I ended up buying a smaller one for my backyard because it's rat-proof. Yep. I see more and more people getting into it all the time on a very small scale, like starting with one raised bed and like one crop. I rarely see someone who started with one crop one year not try something else or add to it the next. It does get very addictive.
It's a powerful gateway drug, I tell you, those raised beds. Every year, do you think of something new that you want to plant?
For sure. Last year, it was blackcurrant bushes. Yeah. I had terrible luck with blackcurrant. I made probably 2 tablespoons of blackcurrant jam this year. Yeah. But I'm going to expand that blackcurrant program anyway, because I think I can do it. And I'm pretty preoccupied with my lawn. I've been looking at seed replacements, very pollinator-friendly ways that I could adjust, particularly the front lawn, which is so decorative, into something that would just be a little bit more of a pollinator habitat, and maybe rip up various sections of the lawn and be replacing it with some sort of like clover, fescue, some sort of mix that might be a little bit more beneficial.
Mowing grass is overrated.
It is. I don't do it.
Although some places have more regulations about lawns and what you could put in your front lawn and back lawn.
Anything that encourages more people to grow stuff and try it out, I don't understand why there'd be something that would discourage that effort.
Yeah.
Particularly in the name of aesthetics.
Do you have a piece of music that I can use here? Something that you hum to yourself in the garden? Or
I feel like I'm very out of touch with new music these days, and I go back to a lot of classics all the time. But when I'm in the garden, I do very much like alt country and anything with a steel guitar. There's a song by Spencer Burton, an Ontario singer-songwriter. He's got a song called Death of Gold, and I always think that that's like in the top 5 songs I've ever heard.
It's a golden road, and it carries a heavy load, weighing down very slow, another road I go. I found the death of gold, it shines bright but fades so old. Oh, it's hard, veins run dry, so dulls, it's glistening in my eye. Then silver covers and rust, and the diamonds all turn to dust. So set wild and set free all desires in me. 'Cause it's a golden road, and it carries a heavy load, weighing down very slow, another road I go.
That was Spencer Burton with his song Death of Gold, as suggested by our guest. Today, we're in the food-producing backyard of Lindsay Bird, the journalist behind the From the Ground Up series about food and farming at the CBC. I begin this section by asking about how the series came to be, how she ended up with her dream job, and the sources of inspiration for her own food growing.
When you started with the CBC, did you think that you were going to do something on agriculture, become the agriculture reporter?
I didn't have that specific goal. I've never been that specific about any of my goals. So I started with CBC in 2009. I was working in New Brunswick at the time.
Okay.
And my first summer there, I was really eager and wanted to kind of get out and explore the St. John area where I was working. And I pitched a little series like, why don't I do one story a week about what's growing right now? And I would go out and interview the raspberry you pick and et cetera, et cetera, put that on the air. And that project got approved, and I did that, and it was really fun. And that was the first time that I had kind of a little bit of exposure to agriculture in that journalistic sense. And I learned a lot, and I didn't know very much. Like, I grew up in suburban Ontario, and I didn't really have a lot of farm exposure, and I didn't have any connection to where food came from. So I was going out and interviewing a raspberry farmer. I was like, I was a blank slate.
Sometimes that's the best interviewer, though.
So that was the first little bit. And since I've been with CBC Newfoundland Labrador since about 2013, I just gravitated. I like doing stories outside, and particularly where we're a visual medium all the time. It's it's always nice to look at. And I was just fascinated. I was interviewing some cranberry farmers when I first moved to Grand Falls, Windsor, and then coming out here to the Corner Brook area. I've always done different little agricultural stories. And last year, a team looking at doing the series and was like, well, you've done a whole bunch of these stories in no particular cohesive sense over the years. Would you like to really dedicate time to this? And that was like a total dream job. Of course, I would like to think a little bit more in depth about agriculture here and particularly focus continually on the positive stories. And that's not to say fluffy, but the things that are a little bit constructive and that show people what can be done. A little bit of myth busting, because I do think that sometimes we tell ourselves that things can't be done. Like, it's a harsh climate and, you know, there's only a few things that grow well here. It is a harsh climate and it takes a lot to grow, but things grow here really well. I did a story in Grand Falls, Windsor, and the news was that cantaloupes grow in Newfoundland. Mark's Market, Chris Oram, and we were talking about his first cantaloupe crop and we were tasting them and that sort of thing. And that was our headline story, was this fruit grows here. And he's like, you know, things can grow here. Like, we just have to maybe all get a little bit on board with enthusiasm and optimism and the things that we can do and focus on that. The From the Ground Up series kind of harnesses that idea. What are we doing and how are people making a difference and what can we learn from them?
Do you get responses from people who are listening?
A little bit. Sometimes we get some emails, and the main gauge these days is Facebook. You have the Backyard Homesteading Facebook group, which is like famous.
It is famous.
And I'll often see the stories shared there and people will be talking about them. So you kind of like observe the commenting going on and seeing how they're sparking discussion or kind of upholding a member of the community and saying, oh, it's awesome that Kingfisher Farms is getting a little bit of spotlight or these different places are getting a moment to talk about what makes them special.
So you've visited quite a few farms.
Yeah, definitely. I try to get around as much as I can. I mean, there was definitely that pandemic lull where we weren't doing any of that. But then visiting a farm is like the perfect social distancing. You can be in a field and do all that. So I do try to get out as much as possible.
Has it changed how you think about food doing this series? How does that parallel with your own evolution as a food grower?
I mean, the education that I've had personally about agriculture has been huge. I wouldn't have been able to tell you before I started reporting exactly how a carrot grew. Like, you know, it was a thing and it's a root vegetable. Yeah. But now I grow them myself with varying degrees of success. The education has been immense and the appreciation of how much work it takes to grow a single thing and that disconnect that I think people talk about the prices that we see at the grocery store. Just like if anyone has tried to grow their own tomato, like it is work. And seeing the amount of work and effort that people put into it, no matter what they're growing here, if it's a quote unquote easy crop, potatoes, you know, I've chatted to many farmers who say, you know, it still takes a lot of work to grow potatoes. Yeah. You know, they need lots of nutrients and everything. Like, don't try to downplay the amount of work that it takes in order to do this. So I've definitely gained an appreciation for that and probably an intimidation factor to just stick closer to home and not make a leap myself into farming. And then the innovation level that I do see, even farmers who consider themselves, you know, more of traditionalists are still doing things like kale on the regular and crops that aren't as quote unquote traditional. Like that word to me doesn't almost make sense because I think everybody, no matter if they're a large scale farmer or a little one, are innovating in a different way and always trying something different.
Do you feel more optimistic about our food security by just knowing more about it?
I think so, because like I said, there's kind of like some myths out there, and I'm not saying that we grow 10% of our food is a myth, although I do kind of question that number that we tell ourselves year after year.
We could have a great conversation about where that came from.
Yeah. And so by latching on to those sorts of like big general ideas, I think we do a disservice to exactly what's happening and how things are changing. I mean, part of it is, yes, there's been a lot of government investment. We've covered that and it has been a real showpiece. And that has move things forward. Like there have been definite new entrants and people expanding crops because of that emphasis, and you see more momentum. I think in my time in Newfoundland, we're looking at like about 8 years now, I think I've seen really big changes in the amount of farm stands and different innovations and people seeking out that local food. I think from here, maybe we need that extra layer of help to get that local food to people, because it still requires a lot of effort on the consumer part. The food is there and it's selling out, but it's, you know, you got to go to the different market stand and make a point. And there's just, the reality is a lot of people are busy and need to go to the major superstores because that's how it works.
I'm hoping that this series continues. Like I said to you before, if only you had started your series before I started the Fit to Eat, I wouldn't have had to take all this time and money to do my series. And I'm just slightly aggravated by that. But I hope that people feel the value of the shows that you're doing, and that that would continue for a long time. Like, I don't think you're running out of farmers to talk to yet.
No, not at all. It's very much a matter of making sure I have time to devote to it, as opposed to the wealth of stories and different ideas that are happening. And again, it's that expansion of the idea of what we're talking about is agriculture. Yeah. Like, let's talk about fish fertilizer. That's another part of it. Let's talk about ground covers. Like, all of those different little aspects of it are in the same sphere as potatoes in a field, right? So I don't see myself running out of story ideas. And as long as Fit to Eat's around, I could listen and be like, oh, that's a good
idea. I always listen to you. I said, oh my gosh, she's over there now. So I better give them a call.
Well, it's funny. We both interviewed Elvis Gillum. I remember I was going to interview him and I listened to your Fit to Eat. And I was like, oh, you're on Ivan's show. And he was like, yeah, Ivan convinced me to get back into the interview game. He was like, I would have said no to you. But, you know, after I did that interview, I said, all right, I can do interviews again. And we had an absolutely phenomenal chat about his wealth of knowledge in the industry.
Oh, I still remember some of the things he said in terms of how things had changed in Robinson's Cod Roy Valley since he started.
That whole area, my partner's from Robinson's, and we spent time in Basingstoke South, and I love the Cod Roy Valley, and that whole area of the province, it just intrigues me so much because there's so much pastoral quality to it. It almost, at points, it doesn't seem like that sort of rugged rural Newfoundland that makes it to the posters, but it's so beautiful in its own right, and to me, that's like one of our big questions of agriculture here in the province. Like, how can we take that heritage of that area of the province and continue it into the future? Because the demographics aren't on its side.
They aren't.
The Cod Roy Valley, it has a real pastoral quality that you don't see anywhere else on the island.
Fires, they wouldn't melt. Any metals that I found were worth something other than nothing. Man will stay far from me, 'cause their worth comes up dry, and his spirit swells up in my eye. I took liberties, I took time, found myself on the finest line. 'Cause it's a golden time, and it seems so heavy on my mind. Silver ledges, humble time, drags along the weary line. Silver ledges, humble time, drags along the weary line.
By request of my guest, that was Death of Gold by Spencer Burton. Today I'm visiting with Lindsay Bird, CBC journalist and budding urban farmer. In this last section, I ask about her experience in the North, her other identity as a poet, and a variety of other topics pop up like leeks and pie crust, and the obscene ironies of some provinces creating farmland while others are paving over farmland.
I read the other day a book of yours of poetry. You were writing about some experience in the North. Tell us a bit about your experience in the North.
Prior to journalism school, I worked in Fort McMurray for 2 years. That was after I'd graduated my undergrad degree. It was in Eastern religions, which is about as useless as you get.
That's very helpful in Fort McMurray, I tell you.
It's not particularly helpful anywhere unless you are considering your own mindset, and then you're fine, but you're still broke. So I moved up to Fort McMurray with a couple friends to pay off those loans, and I lived in work camps there. Yep. And I did that goal. I paid off my loans. I saved up. I went to journalism school. Yep. And then I started with the CBC. And the experience had always stuck with me. And I do write poetry just on the side. I don't know why.
Because you can.
I think most poets will say, I don't know why I do it. It just happens. It turned into a book. And I spent, maybe 7 or 8 years not completely working on that book. Yep. Like just revising it and seeing value in it, even when the outside world was like, I don't think so, and didn't publish it. Yep. And then finally it got picked up by a publisher. And it came out in 2019. And I'm really happy that's
great.
That's out in the world.
It has a real feel to it for that region.
And it was my introduction to Newfoundland culture, right? Like I hadn't been to Newfoundland before I went up to Fort McMurray. And I mean, there's a Newfoundland restaurant. Everybody I worked with was from the island. I got screeched in up there. And I never thought, oh, well, I'll go to Newfoundland after this. It just kind of was one of those things that I'm here now. And it's kind of serendipitous.
What's your favorite food? If you were going to make a meal for somebody and you really wanted to impress them, what would you make for them?
I'm going to impress impress someone with my cooking. It's just, it's not going to happen. But like things I really enjoy eating, like leeks.
Are there any here?
I pulled them out of the ground already. Okay. They are the saddest leeks. It's the second year I've tried to grow them, and they never get bigger than the width of my finger. Like broiled leeks with Parmesan and white wine is like...
Can't go wrong there.
Yeah, I'm going to eat those six leeks that I spent months and months growing, and that's how I'm going to cook those. So I would definitely make that for someone, but I'm much better. I'm pretty good with like pies and desserts and that sort of thing. So apple tarts, maybe that's where I would go to try to impress someone, because it's not going to be a savory dish that I'm going to impress anyone on.
Kind of crust you make. Newfoundland has a unique kind of crust on their pies that's slightly different, maybe biscuit-like.
Yeah, I haven't tried that. I go with either like my mom's pastry recipe, which is like the good old-fashioned Crisco.
Yes, the back of the Crisco package.
Yes, it is literally the back of the Crisco package, although I will tell you they changed it a few years ago. Oh. My mom likes to remind me. So don't use the package anymore, because now they add vinegar. So either a Crisco crust or for Thanksgiving, like I did like a shortbread crust, almost like a shortbread cookie for a tart, and that was very good.
You go back to Ontario to visit family. Do you look at Ontario and the bread basket that's there, all that land and so on, do you look at it differently having lived in New Brunswick and Newfoundland, Labrador?
Yes. And when I grew up there, I was in the angsty teen mode, fairly critical of the cookie cutter houses and the suburbs overtaking the farmland around there in the Greenbelt, this incredibly fertile area that even then, like not knowing anything about agriculture, I knew that it was really good land. And it's just become more pronounced over the years. The stable that I spent my childhood riding at, horseback riding stable, was sold maybe a decade ago, and it doesn't exist anymore. Several other barns I've ridden at have also been turned into. So that's just what's happened with horseback riding barns. But the same thing has happened to farms and that sort of thing. And I just, especially seeing how hard people work here to turn soil into fertile ground and take the most fertile ground, which doesn't, frankly, compare to something in southern Ontario. And seeing that turned into just housing, I definitely feel like a bigger sense of freedom out here. And I don't think I would ever live in a city again. I lived in Windsor, Ontario for 1 year in between some Atlantic Canadian travels. And it was lovely. The city was great. People were nice. And it just wasn't outdoors enough for me. There wasn't enough of the rural landscape that's really gotten in my bones.
Sad to say that the pace of change has not slowed down in terms of the sprawl. I think there's about 800 acres per week farmland that's being taken away. When you think about, do we create 8 acres a week of new farmland here? No.
Yeah, you see, when you're driving up to Norris Point, there's been a couple farms under development there, right on the Viking Trail, and you can see how much work has gone into clearing a little bit of land. Like, it has been months and months and months for some of these farmers just to turn it into a field, which then has to be worked on. And I think so much of my agriculture education has been about soil. You always just end up talking about soil with farmers. That's why I'm trying a cover crop now, because I'm like, okay. And just seeing how much work goes into turning something arable, and then how much of our arable land is now returning to fallow, and then, comparing it to what's happening in southern Ontario. Yeah. It's such a juxtaposition. Yeah. To think that there's places where you could put a shovel into the ground and come up with nothing but dirt, I mean, maybe I've been here too long, but that is astonishing.
Thanks so much for taking the time. In your backyard, it looks lovely. Good luck to the chickens and the bees next year.
I'll keep you posted.
And the goat that comes, right? Yeah, once they change the law.
I was going to say, there's definitely a bylaw that we'll have to change in the future, but don't count that one out.
It happens. Thanks.
Thanks.
As for me, I'm waiting for Lindsay's book of poetry about food production in the province. In the meantime, if you want to read her poetry about her time in Fort McMurray, check out her book, Boom Time. It's available at good bookstores everywhere. And you can listen to some of her series about food and farming in the province by Googling some combination of Lindsay Bird, CBC, and From the Ground Up. It'll work.
Everybody, no matter if they're a large-scale farmer or a little one, are innovating in a different way and always trying something different. Chickens are like goldfish. Like, you just feed them once in a while and they're fine, you know? But bees require quite a bit, so I'm getting ready to winterize them. I hope they make it. I think so much of my agriculture education has been about soil. You always just end up talking about soil with farmers. That's why I'm trying a cover crop now, because I'm like, okay. And I remember in high school thinking, I was like, I want to be a farmer. It just became a big joke at high school. Like, like we're all mall kids, you know, you're going to be a farmer.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. On today's show, we heard Spencer Burton doing a song called Death of Gold, as requested by our guest. Spencer lives with his family on a homestead in the Niagara Peninsula. He tries to be as self-sufficient as possible, as he said in a recent interview. Every now and then, I've got to go and get the kids some Fruit Loops, but generally, we eat stuff that we grow here. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by Allison Krauss and her band Union Station, along with a then 12-year-old Sierra Hall on mandolin. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Just started with like one little raised bed and then another and then another and then it just got ridiculous.